You're listening to Bible Prophecy Daily, a weekday podcast where Bible prophecy matters and matters greatly.
And welcome back to another episode of Bible Prophecy Daily. I'm your host for this episode, Jake McCandless. I am the executive director of a ministry called Stand Firm, where I'm writing and speaking and doing everything I can with friends to help believers navigate such a time as this. In today's episode, I want to talk about my recent trip to Israel. I just got back a few days ago. I hope over the next month or two to drop several episodes about this trip, but I wanted to start with, why would I go to Israel? As you imagine, just the atmosphere today with the war, after the attacks, it doesn't seem like the safest place to be. Actually, it was extremely safe where I was at. The most danger I was in on my whole trip was I had a layover in Chicago, and I left the airport to find the true Chicago deep dish style pizza. So anybody listening in Chicago, help me out. What's the place? What's the place to go to? And I'm going to butcher the name here. But so I tried some Lou Malnati's. Is that right? Did I get it right? And so I was on the right track. So that was the most danger I was in. Sorry for you in Chicago. But as you can imagine, it was something that my family wrestled with. We went as a family in July, and of course I've talked about it in previous episodes. It was greatly impactful to our family, and we went with a ministry called Generation to Generation. Shout out to them. Shout out to Andrew Kirk, Daphne Kirk, Daniela Kirk, who lead that ministry, as they've been building relationships in Israel for the last 15 years. And so they put together this solidarity trip. It wasn't like any other solidarity trip I was seeing out there. And they invited me to come. And so they're going to spend 5 days touring sites of the attack and talking with everyone from survivors from the attacks, parents of hostages, to high-ranking officials in the IDF. I thought it was an incredible opportunity. But as you can imagine, it was something that we wrestled with. I had no idea what that looked like now and what that would look like. And so one of the things that I'm trying to get better within ministry is to work as a family. That it's not just the Jake show, Jake's running ahead and leaving my wife and girls in the dust, but we're trying to walk through this together. And I don't think I have it figured out yet, but I am at least a little bit better. And so it took us some time praying through that and getting the thumbs up from my wife and girls. And we involved our extended family in that process as well. So why would I go? Why would I entertain that idea to a place that at least seemed dangerous on paper? And I know we've got listeners, you're there in the mix, and some of you I know are there in the north where it is. I mean, you're dodging rockets on a daily basis. But why would I go? Well, first, if the Lord calls you to do something, you do it, right? If He calls you to go, you go. Now, I know that's not really fair. You know, that's like the breakup in a relationship, and you use the, God told me to thing, which He does. But it's true. Like, all of our steps should be directed by the Lord. They are. We just need to be, like, realizing that and seeking Him and following His lead. But when I talk about the Lord calling me to go, I want to use some medical terms here, not because I know much about medical things, but I think it's just fitting to help explain some ways the calling of God works in our life and is prompting and leading. I believe there are acute callings, not cute callings, but acute, meaning, you know, in medical terms, something that comes on spontaneously, that maybe just like a one time, like a certain pain, maybe acute. It just comes on rapidly, spontaneously. It may just be a one-time thing. They're going to call that an acute pain. And many times I think when we talk about the Lord leading us, we think more in those terms. You know, the Lord just, boom, just says, hey, go. You know, I think we experience that to levels of, hey, you go talk to this person, you know, whatever that may be. But then I think there is another form of the Lord's calling on our lives that I refer to as chronic. Again, that may not be, we associate that, of course, with pain that is persistent, that's existing. And I believe we have callings on our life that persist, that exist, that they're on the table. And for myself and my family, we feel like we have a calling towards Israel. While we were there in July, I've shared this story, I know, before, but it was extremely impactful to us. I'd been praying for the last 2 or 3 years for our family to adopt a mission. We have a mission locally, with as we're helping plant a network of neighborhood and network churches. But I wanted us to have a to the ends of the earth mission. I pictured that adopting a certain people group or, you know, missionary and those things. But right now, it seems to be the Lord has led us towards Israel. And so we were there, of course, as I said, in July. My oldest daughter, who's 12 now, pulled us aside. As we're at Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Museum outside of Jerusalem, she pulls us aside. And we're outside the museum in a place called the Garden of the Righteous Among Us, or Righteous Among the Nations. And there's trees planted on behalf of those who stood for Israel during the Holocaust, who stood for the Jews. People like Oscar Schindler, who has a tree there, the Ten Boom family. And we're there, and my daughter pulls us aside and says, "Mom, Dad, I want us to have a tree," meaning whenever something like the Holocaust comes again, Scripture talks about this great tribulation that's to come, the time of Jacob's trouble, that we needed to be prepared to be one of the righteous among the nations. Now, that seemed like a long-term goal, but we came back and we're like, you know, what can we do? And so went to a conference. Many of you probably follow Frontier Alliance International. They had a conference the week we got back. And one of the things they rolled out there was an opportunity to go serve in Israel, to be part of a crisis team, to be trained where you could go and serve in crisis like what happened on October 7th. And so I applied for that. The week before October 7th, I get a email basically said you had no useful skills, that I had no useful skills and had been denied. So they were looking for first responders, looking for people, you know, disaster relief, that those type things. So I'm like, "Lord, what can I do? What can our family do?" And then October 7th happens. And one of the things I had been doing was a seminar called Church, We Must Get Israel Right. And Lord just put on my heart to do that. So changed the name to Truth on Israel. Basically same content. And just began hosting events to talk about the truth on Israel, providing a biblical basis for that. And the Lord was in it. So we had found a way to do something. So when I get an email that says, "Hey, we're going on a trip to Israel to find out the truth, the actual truth of what's going on. We want people to come see that truth and go back and retell that." That type of email exists in that existing chronic calling, right? And I think when it comes to the generation of the last days, or just living through difficult times, we need to know what our callings are. Because as life is crazy, it's sometimes the hardest time to really try to decipher the Lord's will, Lord's direction for our lives. And so as I bring it up to the family, you know, we already have this, okay, we're on board to tell the truth on Israel. Okay, Dad, this seems like it might be in that wheelhouse. So first, if you're called to do something, you go do it. And I hope my explanation in medical terms of the Lord's calling is helpful a bit, to really evaluate what is the Lord calling you to do. Second, why not go, right? Listen, God's unfolding plan that we're invited into, and our following with Christ, as we're invited into His unfolding plan, it's exciting. We call our network of neighborhood network churches here in Northwest Arkansas, Epic Life. And I use the term epic quite a bit because I really believe following Christ is the epic life. It's the greatest, most exciting life you could have. And the Lord is working. He's working in our neighborhoods, in our homes, in our everyday life. But there is a spearhead to where He's working. There is a front line. The front line is frontier missions. It's the unreached people groups. And it's Israel, because we have to understand the Great Commission isn't just go tell the nations. and make sure every people group comes to Christ, or at least a remnant of them come to Christ. But it's directional in the sense of, we know as the fullness of the Gentiles are brought in, then the Lord's attention turns to Israel. And so Israel's always going to be the spearhead of what God's doing leading up to his return. And I believe as believers, we should long for being on that front line. I believe that's the default attitude. You know, I think we tend to flip it, right? We tend to be like, okay, I'm going to do my thing unless the Lord just twists my arm to go to the front lines. I think we need to be bummed that we're stuck talking about prophecy here in the comfy United States. A little bit of sarcasm there, but a lot of truth. So why wouldn't we want to go to where the Lord is working? And anytime I can step on the soil there in Israel, I want to. Okay, I share those two because I think, I just hope they can help shape our hearts. But ultimately, biblically, why did I go? Because in Joel 3, we read that the nations or the Gentiles will be judged according to how they deal with Israel. The prophet Joel, chapter 3, verse 1, relaying what the Lord has told him, says, "In those days, and at that time, when I restore the fortunes of Judah and Jerusalem, I will gather all the nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat, or the valley of decision. There I will put them on trial for what they did to my inheritance, my people Israel, because they scattered my people among the nations and divided up my land. They cast lots for my people and traded boys for prostitutes, and they sold girls for wine to drink." It's interesting, those phrases there, scattering the people, dividing the land, talking about kids, talking about girls, talking about women. I mean, this is all things that we saw on October 7th. This isn't talking about just October 7th. This is ultimately talking about the time of Jacob's trouble at the end of the age. But the nations will be judged based on how they dealt with Israel. Now, I think it tends to be easy to hear this and say, well, yeah, this is, of course, this is going to refer to Gaza, you know, the quote Palestinians in the West Bank, you know, Hezbollah, Iran, these nations who are going to ultimately be against Israel there in the last days physically. But I don't think it's just talking about that. Biblically, I would say it's not. Number one, and we'll come back to this, but Matthew 25, we find Jesus as he's, Matthew 24, of course, he's talking about the signs of his return. He shares a couple parables in Matthew 25, and then he returns back to the signs and talks about when the Lord comes, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him and sits on his throne, all the nations will be gathered before him as a shepherd separates the sheep and the goats. We'll come back to this, but Jesus is alluding to, if not outright quoting, Joel 3. He's talking about the same scenario at the end of the age, this judgment of the nations. And how he describes it there is not just the nations involved in that final onslaught physically surrounding Israel and coming against her at the end of the age. It's obvious when you walk through the details here of Matthew 25, beginning in verse 31. Another place I think is interesting is Ezekiel 38 and 39. Again, I know there's debate. I really believe that it's talking about especially the end of this age and this ultimate battle and invasion it's talking about is the time of Jacob's trouble. It is what we would say is Armageddon. But it's very interesting, I think, especially in Ezekiel 39, talks about at the end, it talks about you and Magog and you and the coastlands. You too will be punished. Let me read that. Though in Ezekiel 39, verse 6, I mean, we have see at the end of Ezekiel 38, even coming into Ezekiel 39, we see the Lord through Ezekiel is talking about how that those on the battlefield, those with the one we believe to be the Antichrist and the army with him, the nations gathered with him, how they will be destroyed. But in verse 6 in chapter 39, it says, "I will send fire on Magog and those who live in safety in the coastlands, they will know that I am the Lord. So it's as if, okay, you came, your army came, but your people supported this, and they're still going to get the punishment too. We also see a kind of an allusion to this, I believe, going back to chapter 38, verse 13, when it talks about Sheba and Dedan and the merchants of Tarshish and all her villages, is what the NIV says, who will say to you, this is, I believe, to the Antichrist and those he's gathered with him, have you come to plunder? Have you gathered the hordes to take loot, to carry off silver and gold, to take away livestock, and to seize much plunder? It's this idea of, okay, you're going to do that? Fine, go ahead. It's doing nothing. And I think, you know, that's an issue, right? And so I don't think there's a neutral here to say, okay, what we read in Joel 3 is talking about the Antichrist and his armies. No, I believe we're talking about just in general, how did we deal with them? What is incredible is we have a template of what this will look like. If we go back to the Holocaust and we see how much of the world just stood back as this happened. Those in Poland and Germany, Christians in those days, churches in those days who did nothing, who sang louder as the rail cars came by, they did not deal with Israel right. And we look back and we see what's called the righteous among the nations, which is basically the language from Joel 3 and Matthew 25. So when you go to a place like Yad Vashem and you walk around and you see all these names of those who stood with Israel in those times, we've got a template. My recent trip, we also went to the Friends of Zion Museum, which was really, really incredible. And it talked about really leading up to the 1948, leading up to the statehood, those who stood up for Israel in those times. And it's, I mean, it's every different facet, whether it's politics or, you know, economically, politically, or even militarily, that were represented there in the museum. I mean, we have this template of what it means to stand with Israel. We have a precedence. So ultimately, why would I go to a place that seemingly on paper sound like a dangerous gig? Because Joel 3 says we'll be judged according to how we deal with Israel. So I got to step up. I got to step up and be in the game. I got to lead my family to step up and be in that game. I got to lead my church to step up and be in that game. And hopefully encourage some of you to do the same. Now, when it comes to judgments, I'm not sure how this balances out. You know, ultimately, we have the judgment, the great white throne judgment. Is our names in the book of life or not? Have we trusted in Christ or not? Saved or not saved? Then we have the judgment seat of Christ, where believers are judged by faithfulness. And then you have this, what seems to be like very real physical judgment. So how does it work? How does all that fit together? I don't know. But I do know if the Lord's going to judge something, there is a clear side that he's on. And one of the things, and I'll talk more about this in future episodes, but I think there's a real struggle to understand, okay, on this side of Zechariah 12, when the remnant remaining is saved and they mourn because of the one that was pierced, on this side of that, how do we, as far as a Christ, stand with Israel? I think ultimately we have to see it that we're standing with God. I love going back to Rahab's testimony. As she's there in Jericho and the spies come in and she's willing to hide them and ask for protection because she recognized that their God was legit. She realized she better side with them because their God was the true God. And I think that's where we need to land, which doesn't ignore the people. So I believe because of Joel 3, judged on how we deal with Israel, and I think, you know, reignited in Matthew 25, and I said I'd come back to that. Let's read through that. It's quite lengthy, but beginning in verse 31, it says, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him. He will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on the right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry or feed you? Or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you as a stranger and invite you in? Or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go visit you? The king will reply, Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Now it goes on and basically kind of repeats that. I've preached that. You've heard this. Taught just generically, hey, we need to love others. We need to care for others. And sure, we know that's true. I mean, we see that elsewhere in the teaching of Jesus. But Jesus says these brethren of mine, or as this new NIV says, brothers and sisters of mine. He's quoting back to Joel 3. It's how we deal with Israel. And I really think, and it's just something I'm beginning to work through. I was presented with some research that I think was incredible on this. I believe there's an element when we talk about the great falling away is a connection to us understanding God's continued plan for Israel. I mean, if you go through, of course, we know the great falling away is connected with the rise of the Antichrist. If you go through Daniel 11 and read about the king of the north, who I believe is the Antichrist, read how many times he's against the Holy Covenant. The Holy Covenant, of course, pointing back to God's covenant with Israel and the land. But that's a topic for another day. So I went to Israel, number one, God, I think the Lord led me to. Two, why not? But three, we're going to be judged on how we deal with Israel. And to whatever degree that means, and whatever that means about eternal life and all those things, one thing we know, there's clear cut on which side God is on. And I want to be on His side. And I encourage you to do the same. Now, I think we all agree we're way down the track and closing in on the end of this age. But whether we're that final generation or not, I think one thing we have to realize we need to do is we need to pass on the truth and pass on this reality of the judgment of how we deal with Israel to the next generation. I mentioned the seminar I did, Church, We Must Get Israel Right. The second time I did it, the first time I did that seminar, it was just an absolute laid-in egg. It was terrible. My part was terrible. The response was terrible. And the next week, I'm traveling like 5-6 hours to do it again. And my wife's with me, and we talked about the whole drive, and I'm just wrestling with them. Like, I am so burdened to share this message, just as I'm burdened to share the gospel. Like, I don't even understand fully why I feel this way. And it's so hard for the crowd, you know, to really see where this is relevant. And we went back to Yad Vashem, that Holocaust museum there in Jerusalem, which begins with an exhibit that talks about how did the Holocaust happen, and it traces roots back to the teachings within the church. Somewhere along the way, the church got Israel wrong, which led to complacency, neutrality, and outright persecution, even by the church, at the time of the Holocaust. So if someone before that had got the teachings right, generation to generation, it could be a different story. And my wife, in her wisdom, concluded, yeah, it may not be that relevant to the people you're going to talk to that day, Jake. But if they could begin to get it right and pass it down and make a difference. And I took that as true. Had a piece about it. That was in 2018. This past week, as I was in Israel at the Friends of Zion Museum, they had this exhibit, and it was talking about those who were visionaries, dreamers of a Jewish state. And it told this story about this family in the Netherlands, the Ten Booms. But I knew about the Ten Booms. I knew Corrie Ten Boom. I knew of her family who hid Jews during the time of the Holocaust there in the Netherlands. Eventually got busted. But the name that they said was not the name I knew. Because they weren't talking about Corrie's parents. They were talking about her grandparents. who in that very same home began a weekly prayer meeting for Israel. A prayer meeting that lasted 100 years, ended by the raid on their home, and those surviving being taken to the concentration camps. For 100 years, they prayed. 3 generations. They passed it down to the next generation. I had to call my wife and tell her just how wise she was a few years ago. Still in the negative, but it gave me some points. I want to encourage you. You know, I know when we talk about in times, there's we have different, you know, arguments of, you know, where the Antichrist is going to come from, what's this going to look like, where's Israel's role, all those things. But know this, it is clear. There is a judgment based off how we deal with Israel.
Thanks for listening to Bible Prophecy Daily. We hope you learned something valuable today. Be sure to subscribe wherever you heard this podcast so you never miss an episode.